One.
Blog Talk Radio.
I just added that. That's a.
I heard that.
I got to get a sound effects board on this because that really, really didn't sound good. Welcome, everybody. This is All About Wine. It is Thursday, March. Wow, it's March 11th already?
March 11th.
What was February? February was, we did have February. Okay. Very good. All right. I like that. Last month. And it is 7 p.m., so if it's not March 11th, 7 p.m., you're probably listening to a, whatever you call it, archive version of this on 1,000 mics. Either way, welcome, and we would love to have you call into the program. You can call us directly at area code 64. Oh, it shows a 1 in front of there now. Okay, 1. Uh-huh. Yeah, 1. 646-727-3235. Area code 646-727-3235. Give us a call. You get on the switchboard. It is All About Wine for the next hour, or just under an hour now. And we'd love to have you. We have Ron, a celebrity with us.
Celebrity now.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
He has been.
Not very many bus people. It's rainy and messy here in Florida today.
It is pretty bad. Anyway, you had, maybe we can talk a little bit about that, but you were on last night on another Blog Talk Radio program and got a chance to talk there about wines, and it was really cool. Maybe we'll bring that up after the intro. This is All About Wine. We are talking about miscellaneous countries around the world, mainly Europe and East. Got my direction mixed up.
East.
Okay. And we'll be back in 1 minute. Stay tuned.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles available.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com, featuring Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
We welcome your calls during this one-hour program. Go on air with us by dialing area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Ask questions about any topic related to wine or voice your comments about the program. Chat with us on 1000mics.com. Just click on All About Wine in the show listing and send your comment in the comment box. Always entertaining and informative, it's All About Wine. And now, please welcome Ron.
Thank you.
Maybe we need to change that and put Celebrity Ron.
Celebrity Ron. I was on another Blog Talk show last night. In fact, I asked her to call in tonight. I told her if she'd call in tonight, then we'd let her go plug in for her
Sure.
For her business. She's a travel agent in Florida, on the east coast of Florida, and I got on last night with her, and we talked about wine and how wine and food paired well, and just basic wine 101, just to help some of her listeners and all that demystify wine a little bit. So, So yes, I did do a guest appearance on another show.
Yeah, I don't have her name on here, but it's if you go to blogtalkradio.com/WED Events and Travel. WED Events and Travel.
No, actually, it's not under that. It's under Jamaica. Taste of Jamaica.
Wow, that's interesting.
Taste of Jamaica. It's under.
Well, let me check that because I'm on WED Events and Travel.
You get nothing.
Wine and Travel with Ron Hunt from Florida Estates Wines. Or actually, it says Wines. Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, punch in a Taste of Jamaica, and you get her. That's what she's got logged under. Charmaine is her name.
Charmaine, there you go. Okay, Taste of.
This is really bad. There you go. So,
It was 9 o'clock yesterday evening on March the 10th, and it is available in their archives over there as well. She's the president of an owner of Exquisite Wedding and Events, Inc. and Travel. And let's see, Cruise One, it looks like, is the franchise name. I don't know if she went into that or not, but I believe that was her fourth show, you said. And so, you know, wish her the best of luck, and we'll see if she makes it onto the program and wants to talk a little bit more about that. 646-727-3235 is the number to call to get on the switchboard. We'll put you on the air. You can ask Ron anything about one.
Let's clarify by that.
I was giving a little
Hello, pause. I have a tax question.
Yeah, right. Let's see if we can help you.
Yeah, anything about wine, we'll see if we can't take care of it. We are going to talk about Middle Eastern wines and stuff like that tonight, though. Just a show here to areas that we don't think about wine. So we're gonna do that. And we got a festival coming up Saturday, so we'll stop partway through and give you some information on that.
Very good.
And so I guess I'll just go on.
There you go, Ron.
Take you have the floor.
And thanks. We talked a little bit last week about Cambodia. Hit on that. Cambodia has a winery. And I mean, I emphasize the A because they have one winery. There was a farmer that wanted to start a winery, and he did. He fermented the grapes in plastic containers and bottled and labeled them in his house, and he would sell them to tourists that would come by and all that. And he dwelled deeper into it and got himself a winery going. Now he has more than 4,500 plants growing in about 5 acres in a couple of different farms. Most of the plants he's growing are the varietal type called the Black Queen, Coyolejo, and the Shiraz. He's not a drinker himself. He says he doesn't drink at all, but his son helps him, and he's the one that does the tastings and stuff. The wines are in Cambodia, and this is something I want to mention this now before we go any further, too. Something I discovered, we're going to be talking about, and let me tell you the areas and what we're going to be talking about tonight. Cambodia, a little bit here, Vietnam, Philippines, Thailand, Thai wines, Japanese wines, Indian wines, and Chinese wines. And all of them except for China is in a very warm climate, very warm region, very warm areas, a lot of humidity, a lot of heat. And most of these vineyards of all these areas are trellised, are up very high off the ground. And a lot of them are made so that there's air that can pass around them and through them and under them and over them. And they're picked by hand from underneath. They grow down and go around and pick them underneath. The reason for this is the humidity is so high. If they were so used to seeing grapevines growing right off the ground, California style or French or German style, a lot of this, if these in the Middle East were planted that close to the ground, the humidity would be so bad they would be plagued with so many different types of fungus and types of black rot and things that's spread and affected because of the humidity. So most every one of these countries make their wines or train their grapevines to be off the ground and to get air into them so that aerates the grapes and the growing a little bit better and a little bit better with the sun. A lot of these countries, too, can do two harvests a year, and they can get two crops of grapevines a year. Florida actually could do that, too. We can push our grapevines and probably get two crops a year, but it is a lot of stress on the grapevines. And the winter months, especially in the areas that we are here around Tampa, is just a little bit too cold sometimes, and you can start putting all that effort into it and end up with nothing. So one crop is good here, but a lot of these areas that we're talking about, it's going to be using, can use and do use two crops a year. The winemaker in Cambodia, we talked about him a little bit. He's been doing wines now for about 12, 13 years. He planted about 12, 13 years. He did his first harvest at the end of 2004, and he's doing well. He's starting to catch on with a lot of tourists from the European area there, France and Germany, stuff like that, going over to Cambodia. And he's got a following, and the people are loving it. They say it's just it's a nice wine, and you see a sweet style wine, not really a rosé, but just sort of a softer, sweeter style wine that is a great summer wine. Most people who say it, it works very well for a soft summer type wine. But Cambodia, if you believe it or not, Cambodia really a winery, and so far only one. That's not to say that there won't be more over the years, but so far they only have one, and that might expand as it catches on. Vietnam. All of us are pretty much familiar with Vietnam because of the conflict we had there in the 60s and early 70s, and Vietnam was pretty much torn apart because of that. During the Vietnam conflict, even when the French and Americans and everything were there, wine was one of the last things that they considered and one of the last things that they worried about. The Vietnamese wine growing, or grape growing, I should say, not wine growing, the Vietnamese grape growing is rather, they have a high humidity, they always have the monsoon rainy season. But they do have a lot of hills, a lot of mountains and stuff. And because of this, they can plant the grapevines up a little bit higher altitudes in some of these areas. And it gives for a microclimate. So I mentioned microclimates before. The microclimates really do influence a lot of grape growing around the world, and as it does in Vietnam. They have, the late 20th century, they put in a major focus on the Vitis vinifera grapes, which is the classic grapes we're familiar with, the Cabernets, the Chardonnays, the Rieslings, Pinot Noir, Sauvignon Blanc, on and on. The vinifera grape is being planted much more so in Vietnam than it was. Actually, it started as vinifera grapes. The French colonists, and the French are the ones that were originally over in Vietnam centuries ago, they actually brought over a lot of grapes with them. And the French rule there, they started, it seems that the French, no matter where they go, try to bring grapevines with them because that's what they do. They tried to grow the vinifera grape, and it didn't go well because of the climate. It was such a tropical climate. So Vietnam started to do a lot of fruit wines, and they started to do turn most of their attention to fruit wines for many years. And this is what's been the major thrust of wines coming out of Vietnam, is fruit wines. Until late in the 20th century, the Vitis vinifera grape was replanted. In 1995, a joint venture between the Australian winemakers and the Vietnamese introduced a lot of the grape varieties we know, Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, a few plants of Pinot Noir, Merlot they're trying to grow, different things like this. So, and a lot of the areas they're using now are areas that were littered with landmines from the Vietnam War. And they've cleaned them up and cleaned them out, and they're using them for vineyards now. The Vietnamese, the country of Vietnam, located between Tropic Cancer and the equator, which is south even of Florida, it is very hilly country, and because of the hills, they can plant grapes and get the microclimates. Some of the areas that it has helped the Gulf of Tonkin, Delta, which is in southern Vietnam, Red Rivers area. These are all good microclimates, which tends to give a nice growing area and not too hot. But because of the humidity, because of the areas, some of these areas are able to harvest three times a year, which is a lot of grapes out of these vines. It's really, three times a year to me seems like it's pushing a lot. I don't know. I would like to talk to some of the growers who are doing this three times a year. But since you really don't have a dormant season like you do in the cooler climates, then there's probably no reason why you couldn't do that. There's some rather large vineyards and everything around Hanoi that have proved to be using some modern pruning methods. And the pergolas style of trellising, that's the type that I was telling you about. It's called pergolas, P-E-R-G-O-L-A-S. Pergolas style of trellising is where you raise the grapevines up so that they are off the ground and helps ventilate them and cuts down the risk of, like I say, molds and mildews and stuff that could get in grapevines. Central Highlands, another region that is starting to grow a lot of grapes. The main grape variety in Vietnam right now is the Cardinal and the Chamborson. These are the ones that are planted more than anything else, although there are small vineyards of Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Cabernet Franc. Syrah has been planted, but it hasn't met with Merlot has been planted, but not extensively. The major grapes are the Cardinal and the Chamborson. Also, they are still doing a lot of wines out of the local fruits, and Vietnam is full of native grown fruits or local fruits there. There's different companies from around the world that are going in showing interest in Vietnam for winemaking, trying some sparkling wine production. Not sure how that's going to turn out, but it is being being experimented with now, and we might see some sparkling wines coming out of Vietnam before very long. So, Vietnam. Korea. That Korean alcohol has a long, long history. One of the interesting things I discovered reading about Korea, they have a myth concerning alcohol in Vietnam or in Korea. And let me read this myth. I thought it was interesting. It says, "Once upon a time, there was a king who enjoyed using alcohol to tempt women. He wanted to have as many children as he could. When their son was born, they named him Saul, S-U-L. The word Saul, referring to alcoholic beverages, came from a blending of the words Saul, S-U, and Bull, B-U-L, meaning water and fire, respectively, or fire water. This originated in the boiling liquid, which makes for alcohol, not so much wine, but makes for alcohol. So legend is that a king named his son Saul for firewater, and it has became a tradition in Korea now to make firewater and to make alcoholic beverages. Korean, and I really have to say alcoholic beverages, because the Korean history is a lot of alcoholic beverages. They've got the Cultural Heritage Administration of South Korea has 86 varieties of traditionally brewed alcoholic beverages that is part of the culture, with different types being put in a revered category. The major crop and the most traditional one from Korea has been rice. Rice has been used to make all sorts of different types of alcohol, fermented rice and add yeast. They also use a source of enzymes to ferment. But it's rice wine is as popular in Korea as it is in Japan, although it's seldom we hear about Korean rice wine, choose the Japanese rice wine. I have a story to tell you, Mike. This is something I want to share with everybody. Speaking of Korea, when I was in Vietnam, I was doing guard duty on a pier one night, and there was a Korean group of guys that were also on the pier, and they had a little hut at the end of the pier, a little shack, and they were making soup. And they motioned me over and asked if, in, you know, hand language and hand signals, if I would like some soup. And I nodded that they would, and they gave me a bowl of their soup, and it was absolutely delicious. I think I had three bowls of soup. I asked them what it was, and, you know, through, again, sign language, trying to, you know, understand each other. And they took me over to the water's edge, took a flashlight, shined it in the water, and pointed at the little jellyfish that were swimming around in the water. And in their language, showed me, or in their sign language, showed me that I was eating jellyfish soup that they just picked up out of the water there. It was good, though. It was really good. I'll never forget that. I had myself some creamy jellyfish soup. You know. So,
okay.
I get back to wine here. That was this, that reminded me, I was talking about Korea here, reminded me of that. Korea also does a lot of different beverages and wines using fruits and flowers and herbs and all sorts of other stuff. They ferment the stuff. They also add it for flavoring, and they add it for taste. They do a flower wine. They do medicinal wines. A lot of interesting different types of things that Korea has tradition of. I believe that's pronounced Y-A-K-J-U, Yakju, is literally means medicinal alcohol, and it's a refined rice wine that is went through several fermentation stages, and it comes out as a very clear wine, and it's made with a certain type of rice, and it's called a black rice wine. It goes through these fermentations and stuff and turns it into a black wine, a black rice wine. That's a medicinal wine. The Cheongju literally means clear wine, and this is similar to the Japanese sake. It's that same style of stuff and same type of flavors and taste. This is very popular throughout Korea in the restaurants and hotels and stuff. You can find the Cheongju in a lot of the hotels and restaurants. A special variety of this, which is called Beopju, which is brewed in the ancient city, one of the old ancient cities of Korea. There is also a popular liquor made from sweet potatoes, called soju, S-O-J-U. This is usually a very high alcohol content, the 40 proof, about 20% alcohol by volume, which is right around what my port is, actually. There's special ingredients that go into it. There's a special one that comes from the city of Andong, which is 90 to 100 proof, which is protected by the government. It has certain regulations and protections from Andong, so other cities can't call it that or can't make it. Most of the Cheongju is very inexpensive, you know, a couple of bucks a bottle, but the ones from Andong, very expensive, 20, 30 times more expensive than the cheap stuff, if you will. There is another type of what they call farmer's alcohol, which is a blend of flowers, actually called pear blossom wine. It's brewed with rice and rice malt and pear blossoms, fermented with pear blossoms. And it gives a very a thick drink, very sweet, thick drink that sometimes is so thick that it has to be actually, quote, drank with a spoon. It's wow. So thick. Fruit wines are very, very popular in Korea. There's a number of fruit wines that are made, and they're very popular throughout the country. There is one wine called Poreju, ice wine, which is mixed with grapes. Most popular fruit wines are a plum wine, made with plum wines, and there's all sorts of names for plum wines. There's the Korean black raspberry wine, which is about 15% alcohol, from what I said. Also made with cherries, wines with pine fruits, with pomegranates. And then there's special wines that they make with fruits that's supposed to increase your sexual stamina. So there's all sorts of different wines with fruits coming out there. They also do flower wines. This was, I thought, was extremely interesting. They are a very big market for China to get chrysanthemums, and they make a wine from that. They also make wines from honeysuckle, peach blossoms, wild roses, sweetbriar, just azalea, all sorts of different wines made from flowers, which is all of them run 12 to 20% alcohol. So it's almost beyond the wine stage, and you're starting to move over into, you know, the distilled spirit stage. There is a special flower wine that is called, and I will pronounce this wrong, I know I will, spelled B-A-E-K-H-W-A-J-U by Haekwaju. And this is made from 100 varieties of flowers, a special flower wine made with 100 varieties of flowers. And they make all sorts of other fruit wines and medicinal wines, and there's name for specialty wines that help different parts of the body and help different illnesses and help cure different things. And there's a traditional thing coming out of Korea that's a list a mile long of all these special wines. One, though, that I found, other wines that I found very interesting, was introduced to Korea from Mongolia. And this is a wine from fermented horse milk. I can't see the enjoyment out of that personally, but if they like it, good for them. Fermented horse milk. Philippines. Before I start into the Philippines, I'm going to have myself a drink here, and I'll let you pop on a bit about the festival Friday. How's that?
Yes, very good. Or Saturday.
Saturday, yes. Thank you. Tomorrow's Friday. Saturday.
Okay, we'll be right back after this.
Coming up this Saturday, it's Wine Festival, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Florida Estates Winery. Enjoy live music, food, homemade crafts, and unique gift items, and more. And, of course, world-class wines from Florida Estates Winery. This event is free and open to the public. Enjoy the great outdoor setting at the winery this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Wine Festival, located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. For more information, call 813-996-2113 or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. It's always a great day at Florida Estates Winery.
Yeah, and we are... So you're getting ready to do the Philippines, and I think I'll mention this because I've been to two of these. PhilFest 2010. I don't know if you've heard of that, but located in Tampa off of Nine Eagles Drive at the Biana, I forgot how to pronounce that. They did it, and I was like, Anyway, I'll just say it's at the Philippine Cultural Enrichment Complex. There we go. Friday, March 26th, Saturday, March 27th, and Sunday, March 28th, 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. during Friday and Saturday, and until 7 p.m. on Sunday. I've been to two of them. It's very, very interesting, very cool to go to, all kinds of different vendors, and it's really nice. And cheap. It's like $5 for advance tickets, $6 at the gate. So there you go. And we're going into Philippines right now, so there we go.
And we're going into Philippines. I didn't know that. That's an interesting point. Thank you.
Okay.
Philippines. You know, one thing I found out about the Philippines, they have so I heard a tremendous amount of bad noise just then. Is that coming through on everybody?
Something faded out, and I think I brought it back in. Do you still hear the noise?
No, it's
okay.
Gone.
I think it's gone.
Okay, good. I just All right. Filipino wine is just it actually fascinated me on the Filipino wine and the fact that they have such a diversified amount of liquors and wines and all that in the Philippines. It's just they're Filipinos are a drinking culture without a doubt. They drink, and it was And I'm not trying, you know, any of you Filipinos that might be listening to this, it's not a criticism. It is just a fact from the things that they just enjoy drinking. And the liquors could be either from Philippine or commercially manufactured beverages out of Philippine brought in. There's also rules, regulations of how they are made or anything. So it's just it was a fascinating thing to discover how much of the Philippine culture is based around alcohol. The Spanish colonization of the 18th century brought a lot of liquor and a lot of wine and distilled spirits to the Philippines. And culture was based a lot around that. And most of the drinking and most of the wine and distilled spirits in the Philippines now are just small-scale local productions. It's nothing real large, but there's a lot of them. Beer is the quintessential drink for the Filipino culture. During fiestas, party days, hanging out in the street, front yard, around convenience stores, everything. Beer is the drink of choice more than anything else. It's used one of the most common is San Miguel beer, and it's been advertised to help with all sorts of stuff. They have a San Miguel beer that they've advertised to make you feel good to drink beer. It promotes unity. It promotes friendship. It helps with sexual escapades. There's a promo, a boy saves a girl, and then they go on a drinking bench together. It helps in love and courtship. It promotes Christmas spirit and fiestas and other occasions. San Miguel beer promotes itself as the drink for the Philippines. And so that's really, and I know this is about wine, but that's really when you talk about Filipino alcohol consumption, beer seems to be the main basis for it. Although they do make other types of liquor. Tuba, T-U-B-A, Tuba, is a coconut drink that has a combination of what they describe as a stinging sweet and bittersweet taste. It's made by extracting the sap from an unopened coconut bud, and then they get the juice from that. It takes about a gallon a day of the juice from that, and then they ferment that and store it in earthen jars or bottles now for 3 days. And then they run it through a powdered bark and make a syrup. And this syrup is sweetened, and it then added then fermented again with expanded with coconut flowers and a drink from this. And this is said to cure all sorts of diseases. A lot of areas feed this concoction to babies, nursing babies. It is said that only tough men can withstand drinking a lot of the tuba because it's considered a hard drink. It's something that is wound into the culture of the Philippines. There's a wine made from a coconut called the Lambanog, and it's famous for its high potency. This is a wine that runs about 80 to 90 proof. And now when you talk about proof, it's you cut that in half to get alcohol. So 80 to 90 proof, you're looking at 40-45% alcohol on this, which is extremely high. Mm-hmm. It's been passed on for generations of coconut plantation farmers. And it's still made among all these. And it is very popular, basically because it's so cheap to make. It's very inexpensive. The coconut trees are all over the Philippines. They're very abundant. And so they make this Laminog as everywhere. And it's classified as the poor man's drink because it is so easy to make and so inexpensive to make. There is also a sugarcane wine that is used in the Philippines. It's made from sugarcane, hence the name. It's called Basi, B-A-S-I, Basi. And they have a festival every year. The Basi Festival is held annually. And this is the Basi, the sugarcane wine, has been around before the Spaniards came and invaded the country. It's one of those old recipes, old types of drink that's been around. It's stored in jars actually it's boiled in vats and then stored in jars or earthen jars or glass jars. And once it's cooled down, ground rice and Java plum and other fruits are added to it. And then dried starter is used to start the fermentation. And this is left for up to 3 months to a year to age. And then the final product is a very sweet, with hints of sourness to it, a light brown color. Also, they do a rice wine. They do a corn wine, a sorghum wine. These are all usually made into sweet style. Again, alcohol is usually much higher. They make a wine from a special palm, a nipa palm, from the sap of a nipa palm. And this is left untouched for 3 to 4 months until then the fermentation is stored in earthen jars or glass jars for 2 days. And the longer the fermentation, we'll turn the sap into vinegar. So they also make a vinegar from this, but before it turns into vinegar, they make a wine from that. And then tapay, T-A-P-E-Y, is a rice wine, only known real rice wine out of the Philippines. It's cheap. It's a cheap rice wine. It's about $3 a bottle for a 750 bottle, 750 milliliter bottle. And it's made with a rice yeast and a red variety of rice and banana leaves that have been washed and heated. And the leaves are prepared and laid flat, and the rice is put on it and let the leaves cool it. And they do this big old long production for it. And how they do all that stuff and sell it for $3. But the only real rice wine that comes out of there. San Miguel Corporation is the big one. San Miguel does do a little bit of wine, but basically beer, like I said earlier, is the Filipino mainstay. San Miguel beer has had sales of close to $1 billion over the last 5 or 6 years in the Philippines. So it's a big company. So, again, Philippines, you don't see a lot of wine. And once I finish collecting all my United States, different state wines, I'm going to try to collect world wines. And I think Philippines is probably going to be my last one I'll probably end up getting since it's so rare. Thailand, or Siam, old name of it, Thailand. Thailand is located south of China, west of Vietnam and Cambodia, and east of India. It is a great history of making wine coming out of Thailand. Well, it really surprised me how much of a history Thailand has as a winemaker. They have they've been doing wine for many years, and they've you can trace it back to years back before 100, 200 BC on some of the wine that they've been making. But within the last 25, 30 years, they have really exploded on the scene with wines. They're getting a lot of technology coming in from France and Australia, and they're expanding their capabilities. Thai wine now is becoming prominent around the world. It's becoming a world known wine. Argentina, Chile was a few years ago, or even longer ago, how Australia was here in the States. We didn't know too much about it. Now you talk to almost everybody, and they're talking to you about how great these different wines are. A lot of the wines are available in mostly in Thailand, the hotels and clubs and stuff, but a few have found their way around the world, and more are finding their way around the world. Again, most because of the area that it is, most of the grapevines are producing two crops a year, and because of this, they're able to produce a lot more wine. The exportation of the wines are going to Europe, America, Japan, all over. The white wines that they're doing is Chenin Blanc. They're getting a great Chenin Blanc with some a little touch of sweetness and fruity flavorness. They do a Chenin Blanc that is dry, extra dry Chenin Blanc. And you have to realize Thai food, and I was in Thailand, and Thai food is very spicy. Curry is predominant in a lot of the foods, and it's a very spicy food. We talk about how Mexican food is so spicy. The Thai food and Korean food and all that tends to be very spicy, but just a different type of spiciness. It affects your taste buds differently. And to match up wines with these, you really have to watch what you're doing. And what they're coming out with some very good wines in Thailand that do match with their Thai dishes, their seafood dish and stuff. Chenin Blanc is going well with the Thai seafoods, and they are making also a late harvest type wine with the Chenin Blanc, which is interesting because the humidity in there could activate the botrytis, so I'm sure they get themselves a very interesting late harvest. Rhine's Syrah, big over there. It matches up so well with so many of the Thai dishes and the spiciness of the Thai dishes. The good deep-colored red Syrah with a lot of fruitiness and berry flavors and rather low tannins. Because they're getting three crops a year, they're not pushing the aging and all that so much as they're getting them out, and so the tannins aren't overpowering, but they're still being able to hold up well with the Thai dishes. Rosés are made from a Syrah also. There's a lot of Thai foods that match well with a rosé, and the Syrah is the grape of choice for the rosés. The popularity of Thai wines, though, hasn't caught on greatly in Thailand as much as they are shipping around the world. And the reason for this is that the government has a very heavy tax on all alcohol. Imported wines taxed at about 340%. So you don't see a lot of them coming into the country, but you do see a lot of it going out, and they're trying to spread it around for that. The government, I'm sure, will lower it, and it'll open up a whole new market once they start getting used to their own wines. Siam Winery is the big one in Thailand. The vineyards are floating. Oldest viticulture areas in Thailand, and one of the largest areas, the largest area, and they have a floating vineyard. The vines are separated by canals, and they're harvested by boat. And the grape varieties are a couple that we haven't heard, but the grape varieties are good to go with so much moisture in the ground, so much water in the ground. The Pac Dum and Malaga Blanc are the two grape varieties that are located in the Siam Winery, and these are wines that go great with, again, the spicy, complement the spicy Thai food quite well. Red wine grapes are growing in the hills of Thailand. the higher altitude, more suitable for Syrahs and Colombard, which is because of the little bit cooler climates in the hills, it works well. Thailand formed, they have a Thai Wine Association that was formed in 2004. And that was, well, actually in 1994 was the first Thai grape wine was launched. And the Thai Wine Association is, the objective is to create awareness and enhance the image of Thai wines, both domestic and internationally. And they've been doing it. They've been doing a good job of it, trying to make the Thai people more proud, more aware of their wines and more proud of their wines. They are also, they have three viticulture areas, the designated areas. They're called TVAs, Chiang Rai and Phuket area, the Koh Yai on the Korat Plateau, and the central area called the Chow Phara Delta. These are the designated areas, TVAs, for Thailand. And they're promoting wine tours and wine all that, and they do recommend that you give them a call and arrange tours because they said it's a great place to have tours. One other one I want to mention is the Monsoon Valley Rosé. This is made from a blend of the Malaga Blanc and the Colombard grapes, and it the color turns out sort of a slight orangish color, and with a rich plumminess in the taste, and it's lighter style wine. It's something that really caught my eye when I was looking at Thai wines. Japanese wines. History of Japanese wines is long, and I just, 718 BC, they were growing grapes in Japan. Jesuit missionaries from Portugal came over and brought a lot of grapes with them and a lot of clippings, grapevines, and they started wines, or started vineyards, and they were making grapevines for centuries and grape wines for centuries out of Japan. In the late 1800s, though, phylloxera hit Japan. And again, for those of you who aren't familiar, phylloxera is a mite that gets in roots of grapevines and kills them. So it devastated the Japanese wine growing industry. It knocked it down tremendously. Very few growers existed after phylloxera hit. And then World War II did even more devastation to the wine growing business in Japan. After World War II, though, it started to pick up, and it's still developing. It's the thing with wine is stringency, and the acidity of wines is not something that as an overall Japanese people take to. And so the wine hasn't really caught on as far as others, as far as the reds go. They're looking really a lot of sweet wines and sugar, honey type wines are what you find mostly in Japan for many, many years. Wine called the Suntory, or red jewel port wine, a very sweet wine, was very popular until the late 70s, actually, until late 70s, early 80s. And then more grapes were being brought in from Europe and the United States, actually. And during the 70s and 80s, grape wine spread like crazy. It was a lot of Western influence came in and a lot of Western European growers and winemakers came in. And it the wine shot through the roof. One of the things that was very, very popular and still is organic wines. It's something that the Japanese people seem to really take to, and so organic wines are very popular. Land being very expensive in Japan, so the wine, once you get the grounds and start doing it, the cost is a little bit expensive. There is a a Japanese wine festival every year using only 100% Japanese grapes, and it's only for Japanese winemakers and Japanese grape growers and Japanese wines, and they are attracting people from all over the country and around the world to attend this every year, to taste it and to judge and see how it's. And Japanese wines have been entered into other contests outside of Japan, and they've scored very highly and very well. The major wine-producing regions of Japan is because of the climate. A lot of it on the mountains. A lot of it goes into the mountains and the hills, and you find a lot of the wines or grapes are being grown in, again, microclimates, a little small areas. During World War II, wine was used a lot in the military to provide a dietary supplement to a cream of tartar was made from grapes and from wine. But it's fruit wines and grape wines are exploding all over the country now. There's a tremendous amount of grapes being grown there. One of the grapes that's being used a lot there is called a Muscat Belly A. This is a red wine grape, and it was developed by a Japanese man by the name of Kawakami. He died in 1944, but the Muscat Belly is a mix of the belly type grape, B-A-I-L-E-Y, Bailey, and the Muscat Homburg, and it is used all over Japan. It's also another grape that Kawakami made, did, was a Black Queen, and it's a lot like the Muscat Belly grape, only a little bit darker in color than the grape. The juice from the Muscat Belly grape is a sweeter style juice. It is dry edges to it, but basically it's sweet juice. Although lately they've been adding it to a lot of red varieties of Bordeaux style grapes and Burgundy style grapes and making a much darker, much more tannic type wine that is a sort of a Bordeaux style of a wine lately. Japan has developed a legal system for wines produced in Japan, like the French Appellation d'Origine de Contrôlée or the United States American Viticulture Areas. Japan has their designation, their designated areas, and their designated types of grapes. And if it's fermented and the grapes from Japan and everything, it could state right on the label Japanese wine. But if they bring grapes in from anywhere else or anything not done in Japan, they cannot put that on there. So they're trying to get even more controls and more pride in the Japanese grapes and the Japanese wines. Indian wines, India. India is, we're going east of Thailand, west of Thailand now. And India is, again, another long history of grape growing. We're looking back at the, thank you, my engineer just pointed out what time it was. I think she's trying to get me to stop, but we're not going to chit-chat for 7 minutes, so I'll cover India, and then I'll finish up next week before we start on the United States and Canada. We'll do that next week. But let me talk a couple minutes on India here. And India and Indian wines and a little bit about Pakistan and China. Well, I'll tell you what, let's do. Instead of going into India at all, let me just talk for a couple minutes about Pakistan here. Pakistani wines. Pakistan is really not an area noted for wines or anything else, and they still aren't, because alcohol is has been regulated so much, and the sale of alcohol and the making of alcohol, all that has been so controlled in Pakistan that it's never really had a chance to catch on. Although the government is becoming a little bit more liberal in its outlook on alcoholic drinks, it still hasn't loosened all of its controls. You will find restaurants that serve all kinds of alcohol in the major cities. If you really look at alcohol in Pakistan, most of it is contraband because the government hasn't, and especially local governments, a lot of local governments are very strict on the making of alcohol. There is Murray Brewing Company, M-U-R-R-E-E, the Murray Brewing Company has a monopoly in Pakistan on alcoholic products. They are the ones that do all the beer, all the wine, and all the spirits, and it's they work on improving it a little bit, but they don't have a whole lot of competition. They have to. They've got a rap on it, and because of that, the wine business in Pakistan is not a primary thing. Tobacco, food, drink is primarily the main source of food and main source of income, and alcoholic beverages and alcoholic drinks are not that big in restaurants. Although they are serving it, it's not that big. So Pakistan has long ways to go. It's they're starting to get a little bit more notice from Western culture, and there are some wineries from the West and Europe that are looking at expanding into Pakistan, but the Pakistani wine business still has a few years to go before it starts becoming anything noticeable. And that's it. So we will talk about India and China next week and then start on North America.
All right. We have this weekend, this Saturday, we were talking about the Wine Fest, and the weather so far is looking it's looking very good for Saturday. I'm showing up.
First time this year.
Yeah, you might actually have a
good fest.
70 for the high, 56 for the low. It's supposed to be good. Our rain is pushing out finally, and we may have some more rain tomorrow because I'll be working outside, and that's usually when it happens. And kind of like your Wine Fest, you know, on Saturdays you had some really bad weather this beginning of this year up to last weekend, or last time, I guess, and then hopefully this weekend will be good. So definitely come out and make it to Wine Fest, and you're going to have, if weather is permitting, Lisa's going to be there with Cookie Lee Jewelry. All pieces are just $10 a piece. Tina is going to be there with her line with a line of Stacy's Gifts with handmade soap and jewelry. Jennifer is going to be, she's actually new, but she's going to bring her line of Baby Bling by Jen. That's pretty cool. Those are crocheted flower headbands for toddlers and infants. You got to really check those out. Nina's going to be there, with melted bottles. And I have 90 seconds. Let's see. What else? Let me get to the address. 25 State Road 52, 25241, State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. You want to punch that into your GPS. That's Land O'Lakes. Give the winery a call. I'd love to hear from you. Let them know you heard about us on the program and you were listening. Area code 813-996-2113 or email corp at floon.com. C-O-R-P, the @ FLEWN.com. Visit them on the web. Subscribe to their newsletter. It's really cool to get the newsletter. There's all kinds of information in there, including event information, things that are happening down at the winery, and tips. And there's also recipes, wine facts. All that is in the newsletter. And so you want to subscribe to that. Check out the information on their website, www.floridaestates.com. floridastateswines.com. floridastateswines.com. We will be back next Thursday at 7 p.m. for another episode of All About Wine with Ron. Ron, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Night, everyone.
Yeah, thank you. And a lot of information tonight. We'll pick up again next week right here on Blog Talk Radio and 1,000 Mics. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And
thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you. All right. And that's funny. I can still play the wave file even though I'm not logged on.